Good morning. First case of the morning is United States v. Mark White. Mr. Schlesinger.
Good morning, Your Honor. Ms. Levin. May it please the court, Jeffrey Schlesinger on behalf of Appellant Mark White. In determining whether the government presented sufficient evidence to show that Officer White acted under color of law in the incident in which he was accused, I believe it's important for the court to consider the historical context of Section 242 of Title 18 of the United States Code. The case cited by both the government and the defendant in its appeal of Screws v. United States, 1945, was one of the first cases to address and lay groundwork for application of criminal liability for violation of civil rights. In that case, the Supreme Court explained that the section was enacted to enforce the 14th Amendment. It derives from Section 2 of the Civil Rights Act of April 9, 1866. Senator Trumbull, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which reported the bill, stated that its purpose was to protect all persons in the United States in their civil rights and furnish the means of their vindication. In origin, it was an anti-discrimination measure, as its language indicated, framed to protect Negroes in their newly won rights. Justice Douglas, who wrote the opinion for the court, went on to say that when the statute is applied to actions of state officials, it should be construed so as to respect the proper balance between the state and the federal government in law enforcement. He went on to say the 14th Amendment did not alter the basic relations between the state and the national government. I believe that this is important because it's clear that the original purpose of the act was to prevent primarily voter and jury rights violations by states which would not enforce those federal rights. The enforcement of the section has evolved greatly over the past 59 years and certainly encompasses other activity. But an element of the offense remains that the defendant or the person accused must act under color of law. Now, in its brief, the government pointed to two pieces of evidence that Officer White was acting under color of law when he assaulted Ms. Pryor. The first was White's own statement. After the assault was finished, and it may have been only seconds after, Officer Ms. Pryor attempted to use her cell phone or ask someone to call the police. At that point, Officer White responded, "I am the effing police."
That's pretty damning, isn't it? That piece of evidence, isn't it pretty conclusive?
Well, it's true, for one thing, that he was the police, but the mere fact that he's a police officer does not mean that he acts under color of law, no matter what action he takes. In fact, the case of Gibson versus City of Chicago, Judge Ripple held that acts committed by a police officer, even while on duty and in uniform, are not under color of law unless they are some way related to the performance of police duties. Clearly, his assault on Ms. Pryor was in no way related to the performance of his police duties. That in itself is not a defense, because if he's acting on those duties and goes too far, he's clearly liable under 242. However, his statement that he was a police officer and even his subsequent actions in attempting to cover up the crime by filing a police report should not be determinative any more than if Officer White's response had been, "I'm not acting under color of state law." This is something that clearly is not in his mind at the time. If he had made such a statement, I'm sure the government and the court would not accept that on face value and would go further to examine the circumstances of the offense. He's working as a bouncer in a strip club. Part of his duties are to enforce order in the club and to eject disorderly persons, including dancers. Ms. Pryor was a dancer in this case. when he does not show any police authority and say I'm a police officer, attempt to arrest her until after the assault occurs. And it's also important that the government did not charge him with using his position to file false charges against Ms. Pryor. Had they done so, then this would be a much different case. But the indictment specifically said he violated her right by beating or striking her. I agree with the government that the evidence that he stated he was a police officer after the assault occurred and that he subsequently filed charges is something the court can consider and the jury can consider, but whether it is sufficient to meet the element of color of law beyond a reasonable doubt, it's our position that that by itself is not. The other factor that the government pointed to was the fact that he was wearing a badge and a gun and at the time the assault occurred. As I pointed out in Gibson, that by itself should not be determinative that this action was taken under color of law. It is, again, a factor that the court or the jury could consider, but looking again at the purpose that 242 was enacted, it was created to address a limited range of offenses. This is an assault that is clearly violative of state law as well. Whether state charges were filed or not should not be conclusive as to whether there was a federal violation, but the federal violation contains the added element that it must be taken under color of law.
Is the Brown case distinguishable, you think?
Yes. In fact, the Brown case, the facts were misstated by the government in their brief. The government stated that Officer Brown was working as a security guard at the time of the assault and that he was in uniform. What the opinion states is that although Brown moonlighted at the lounge as a bouncer, he was not working that night or early the next morning. Now, I'm not sure what Brown was wearing. There were two officers involved, Brown and Troxell. Troxell is stated as not being in uniform. Brown is indicated as dressed in a police jumpsuit. Now, I'm not sure what a police jumpsuit is and how that would indicate his authority. However, from the facts of the case, he jumped on the truck of the person that they were assaulting and pointed to the police on his back to indicate that he was a police officer prior to the assault occurring. The other important critical factor in Brown is that Brown and Troxell, who were off duty and were, I think, riling away the hours, was Judge Bauer's term, at the strip club, went out to investigate drug activity in the parking lot. That's a criminal activity, and that is something that would necessarily involve their duties as a police officer. In White's case, he was doing his job as a security officer. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Levin?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Jennifer Levin for the United States. There is ample evidence here that White was acting under color of law when he assaulted Ms. Pryor. It's not simply two pieces of evidence. There's a whole host of evidence. And evaluating color of law, this court looks at the defendant's actions, including a pattern of behavior which shows that he's acting with police authority or otherwise advertising or publicizing his police affiliation. White regularly wore his police badge and his weapon in plain view when he worked at the nightclub. Everyone who was a witness testified in this case knew that he was a police officer. He told others he was a police officer, and they saw his badge and weapon that night that he assaulted Ms. Pryor. It's not a question of whether or not he says he's the police either before or after or during the assault. In fact, it was in the heat of the assault when Ms. Pryor cried out and said, somebody call the police, that he says, I am the police. You have two witnesses who were in the assault who said they did not come to her aid sooner, specifically because he was an officer. They, even though they knew what he was doing was wrong, they did not help her, even though her mouth is her whole face is bloodied. She's lying on the ground because they said he was an officer.
I think your opponent's argument is that the conduct he was carrying out was unrelated to any, even the start of any police activity.
that's not essential. I mean, you can act beyond the scope of your duties as a police officer and still be considered to be acting under color of law. It's conveying the impression of your police authority, which clearly White's done here. By preparing the arrest report and the charges, he's again trying to give an imprimatur of law enforcement authority for the conduct that he did. All the charges that he filed were with regards to his position as a law enforcement officer: resisting arrest, disorderly conduct for not following the instructions of an officer, communicating threats to an officer, and battery on an officer. Those reports and charges were done as if and no different than he were an officer on duty. The mere fact that he was off duty, this court has repeatedly said, is not dispositive in and of itself. And here there is simply ample evidence collectively to say that he was acting under color of law. In the absence of any other questions on this, I just move briefly on to two other issues. That
I'd just like to ask a question about the this evidentiary point about the prior act of Mr. White. That would presumably put in to show intent. It is a specific intent crime, but was intent an issue here, really, or is this primarily showing that he's a bad guy and likes to beat up women?
I'm not quite sure the extent to which intent was challenged in the course of the trial, but the United States is able to prove intent because, as you say, 242 is a specific intent crime, and we can prove it through the use of 404B evidence. And both United States versus Brown and United States versus Torres, this court has admitted prior acts of retaliatory intent and the use of excessive force when there are challenges or perceived challenges to the defendant's authority under Rule 404B in order to show intent. So therefore, the district court's ruling here is consistent. I'd also like to add that this case is not significantly different than Brown. In Brown, for purposes of the similarity in the prior acts, there were two officers. Brown was indeed wearing a jumpsuit, also as a Gary police officer. It's a one-piece outfit where police is written in giant capital letters across the back. The prior act that this court affirmed to be admitted in Brown, he was not wearing a uniform. He wasn't wearing anything at that time that he assaulted, I believe it was Ms. Carta. But the court said that because he routinely advertised his police authority when he was working at that strip club, that the fact that he assaulted the prior assault was committed at that club against someone who was working there, well, was well within the scope of acting within his police authority and sufficiently similar to the charges of the offense there. So again, there were similarities of the prior conduct, and this court has repeatedly said that with specific intent crime of 242, a prior assault is admissible for purposes of showing the intent, which is why it was allowed here. The district court also gave three instructions to the jury to say that the prior assault involving Ms. Barkley and Ms. Coleman was admitted solely for purposes of addressing the whether or not White intended to violate the civil rights of Ms. Pryor. It was given on three occasions before each of the two witnesses testified to the prior assault and as part of the final instructions. So any concerns of prejudice are clearly addressed by the giving of this limited instruction. If there are any other questions with respect to 404B or with respect to the admission of reference to the polygraph or anything, unless there's anything else, I'll...
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schlesinger.
Thank you, Your Honor. The issue of color of law was not raised by Brown on appeal in that case. There was an issue about a prior act and 404B evidence, and again, if you look at Screws, I think it's apparent how the course of law has changed on that issue. Justice Douglas in Screws talked about notice to state officials and the willful aspect of Section 242 so that they would be put on notice that they were violating something, that they were taking an action. The government's theory of this case, and that's why they used the 404B evidence, was that Officer White would snap when his authority was challenged in any way. certainly there's no premeditation. There's no idea by Officer White that I'm going to violate this person's civil rights. His action may have been wrong. It may have been, it was wrong. It was incorrect, but it is covered by state, more than adequately by state law. And the fact that he's wearing a badge and a gun does not by itself make that action under color of law.
All right. Thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement.